Hello, Indiana 4-H, and welcome to The 4th H. The 4th H is a new Indiana Healthy Living podcast series that aims to bring a renewed energy and focus to the 4th H in Indiana 4-H. My name is Angie Frost, and I am a Purdue University 4-H Extension Specialist and a registered dietitian. The first series for our podcast is called Myth Mondays. This is an opportunity for us to tackle myths about nutrition, physical activity, and social-emotional health. So, as we pledge our health to better living, let's get started. This week's myth tackles the issue of sun safety. Many people have questions regarding sun safety, especially regarding the proper use of sunscreen. How much is enough? What SPF should I use? Do we need to wear sunscreen when it's overcast or cloudy? And why do I need sunscreen if I tan easily? Today we'll talk about sun safety facts that will keep you and your family safe while enjoying the outdoors. Today I'm joined by Kay Nanette. Kay is a nurse practitioner from Spencer Dermatology Associates in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Welcome, Kay. Please tell us a bit about yourself.
Thank you, Angie, and thank you for this opportunity to talk with you today. I'm a nurse practitioner and have been a nurse practitioner since 1992, working in dermatology with Dr. Linda Spencer since 1998. I myself never participated in 4-H. I was a city girl, and back then, you just typically didn't do 4-H, but both of my children have done 4-H, and my son is actually a Purdue College of Agriculture graduate. My husband has worked for the state fair since 2006 and has actually worked with Purdue Ag Alumni's Pioneer Village since 1987.
Oh, great. That's awesome to have a 4-H connection in your family. And even if you didn't get to participate, then you've had lots of years of experience with your kids. Then.
Yes.
Great. That's awesome. Well, let's begin with why we need to wear sunscreen. Kay, can you tell us a little bit about what causes a sunburn?
Basically, a sunburn is when you get too much ultraviolet radiation. Typically, what we're talking about here is from the sun. And that causes a superficial inflammation of the skin.
Sunburns can be quite painful. Hopefully today we'll learn a little bit about what we can do to protect our skin from those sunburns. Why is it particularly necessary for us to wear sunscreen? And is summer the only time that we need it?
So the more exposure your skin has to ultraviolet radiation over the years, the more damage that occurs to your cells. So it increases your risk for skin cancers, as well as sunspots, wrinkles, and there are other immune responses that can occur with prolonged sun exposure. Additionally, some people actually have conditions that can be harmed by sun exposure.
So sun exposure can be very harmful to some people, and we should be cognizant of that when we go outside each day.
Correct.
And is summer the only time that we need to worry about that?
Well, one of the things I'll tell my patients when they come in without sunscreen is I'll ask them if the sun rose this morning. So any time that the sun has risen in the sky, whether it's cloudy or not, yes, you should be wearing sunscreen.
Okay.
At least SPF 15 year-round, but typically in the summer months in Indiana, we would recommend SPF 30.
Now that we know how sunscreen can help protect our skin during all times of the year by blocking those harmful rays from the sun, does wearing sunscreen also block the amount of vitamin D that our bodies can produce?
That is a very good question, Angie, and certainly one that we hear a lot when people say that they don't wear sunscreen. So there's kind of a complex way that vitamin D is produced in our skin. And so currently there's no evidence from any type of randomized trial or longitudinal studies that there are significant suppression of vitamin D production by the use of sunscreen. The skin's production of vitamin D is so efficient that casual exposure to the sun on the face and arms is typically enough for most people. Vitamin D production, however, is affected by multiple aspects of one's body, age, their location, the time of day, the latitude and where they live, and their health. It's also, vitamin D is converted to its active form through the kidneys. So it's a complex situation, and typically vitamin D is probably not affected by sunscreen use in most people.
Myself as a registered dietitian, I know that people can also get quantities of vitamin D through the foods that they eat, like dairy products and other fortified foods. So that's always good to know that their vitamin D production naturally is not going to be affected, but that they, if they're worried about it, they can also eat some vitamin D rich foods or consume those on a daily basis.
Exactly. And if they're concerned about their vitamin D levels, there is a blood test that your doctor can order and check your vitamin D levels to see if they're in range. And the reason we're concerned about that is because of bone health.
Absolutely. And it is important to note as well that taking mega doses of some vitamins can also be harmful. So please check with your doctor and make sure that you're taking appropriate amounts of vitamin D. It is a fat-soluble vitamin and can build up in your body. And sometimes that too much of a good thing is not good. So keep that in mind.
In segue to that, Angie, I did read as I was preparing that you actually can't get toxic doses of vitamin D from exposing your skin to the sun because of the whole mechanism in the body. Those metabolites are just broken down. Although it's a toxic vitamin, if you would supplement, it isn't normally through your body's production.
Because like you say, your body is very efficient at doing its job. And when you consume a diet rich in vitamin D, it's very hard to get too much too. But when you do supplement with a pill or some other type of supplementation, you can go overboard on that. So be very careful with those types of products. That's a really great point. Thanks for making that. I think the next question can be just a little bit tricky. So how much sunscreen is enough?
So there's kind of two rules that are out there. One is the teaspoon rule. So like a teaspoon to do your face and a teaspoon to do your neck and then a couple teaspoons. Well, then you're having to add up lots of teaspoons.
Right.
So an easier way that I use is whatever your size, if you fill your hand with sunscreen, that should be enough for your whole body.
That's a really good point because as I was preparing, I had read the 1 ounce rule. So 1 ounce or about the size of a shot glass. But that can be very different based on your size. So having your hand in relation to your body is a really good tip. So that's a great one. Just to clarify for some parents who are putting sunscreen on their children, would you use your child's hand and then rub that into their skin, you know, their whole body so that you're not using your hand and then it might be too much? So,
yes, exactly.
What are your thoughts on spray-on sunscreen and how do you know that you're using an effective amount?
So as I was researching for this, I found that there wasn't any scientific information or studies that had anything of significance to say about adverse effects with spray-on sunscreen. However, the huge tip is don't spray it into your face, especially because of the risk of inhaling it or getting it in your eyes could cause some adverse effects. So if you're applying spray-on sunscreen, you spray it into your hand and then rub it onto your face. With spray-on sunscreen, you know you're getting enough is your skin is supposed to look like it's glistening wet, all surface areas. And so a lot of times with any type of sunscreen, remembering those places like the back of your neck, your ears, behind your arms, the tops of your feet are critical.
So you mentioned not forgetting certain parts of your body, like your ears or tops of your feet. Are there portions of our skin on our body that are more sensitive to the sun that we really need to be especially cognizant of?
So your epidermis is thinner on your face than other parts of your body. Your top layer of skin is different thicknesses. However, unexposed skin would be the most sensitive. So if you have never exposed a part of your skin and then go out in midday sun in the middle or late June, that skin is going to burn more quickly than skin that has been used to getting some amount of daily sun exposure. And then you also have to think about the cosmetic effects, if you will, which is you may care more about how your skin looks on your face than how it looks on the top of your feet, for instance.
Sure, that makes sense. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about whether all sunscreens are created equal. Are there ones that some brands that are better than others? Do they have an expiration date? What can you tell me about those things?
So sunscreens do have an expiration date. They're tested and so should be good on the shelf for 3 years. So if you look at your expiration date and it is past that, it would be a good idea to just buy new sunscreen. But saying that, if you bought sunscreen this year and didn't use it all, you should be good to use it next year.
Okay.
So it's pretty stable.
Okay. Good. Is there any thought to that if you have leftover sunscreen, maybe you're not using enough?
Well, that is true. That could be the case. And there are different types of sunscreen ingredients. So there's physical sunscreens. Those are your titanium dioxide and zinc oxides. And then there's chemical sunscreens like avobenzone and Mexoral. There are also degrees of SPF protection, and you want to look for labels that say it protects both UVA and UVB rays. So it'll say that, or it may say it's a broad spectrum.
Good. Those are good things to look for, and especially that expiration date. So if you find some sunscreen in the back of your cupboard when you're planning a day at the beach and it's expired, then best stop off at the store and buy some new before you go. So that was really helpful advice and pretty easy to follow. Just fill your hand up with some sunscreen, put it on every day, and you should be good to go. Yet during these summer months, being outside and enjoying the nice weather, sometimes we lose track of time and we forget to reapply sunscreen. So what should we do if we get sunburned?
So I'd like to mention a couple other things to use to protect your skin from the sun in addition to sunscreen, which may help reduce your risk of getting that sunburn. One is to get a hat with a brim, and you want at least a 3 to 4 inch brim so it covers the ears and neck.
Okay, so not just a baseball cap.
Exactly.
Okay.
Sun protective clothing is a wonderful product. It's typically cool. It's not expensive, and you don't have to worry about reapplying it. And it uses UPF, or ultraviolet protection factor, in its ratings. So you'll see for most shirts and slacks that there's a UV protection rating of about 50. And for young people, especially infants and toddlers, actually any age, getting sun protective swim clothing is a wonderful idea. First off, sunscreen is water resistant, not waterproof, and it's either 40 to 80 minutes of protection. So you have to really be good about reapplying. But if you're wearing a swim shirt and a swim hat, they make those too, you're going to be less likely to burn. There is also a product that's an oral supplementation with, hopefully I'm pronouncing this right, Polidium leucotomus. It's an extract, and it can be found over the counter in certain vitamins. A brand I'm familiar with is HelioCare, and it helps to decrease cell damage and inflammation from ultraviolet light. So it can be a supplement to your other sun protection, and it can also be something that you use if you get a sunburn, as it does help repair the cells. So if you get a sunburn, we usually will recommend take 2 of those pills that evening to help protect sun damage. The other tips for sunburn is using a cool water compress for comfort, and you can use aloe vera cooling creams that have menthol. There's also, if you go to the store, you can get an over-the-counter hydrocortisone, or you can get prescription products if it's bad enough that you need to see a healthcare provider and they might give you prescription steroids, or in some cases of severe sunburn, oral steroids.
Okay. I think it's important to clarify that with the supplement that you're talking about that can be taken orally, that you still need topical sunscreen as well. Is that correct?
Definitely. It is a supplement. It is not in place of.
All right. Great. That's really good point to make, because I know it seems very easy to just take the pill and not have to worry about putting the sunscreen on and reapplying and those kind of things. So using them in conjunction is the best bet for yes. everyone.
The other thing I didn't mention is peak sun is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So those are the hours when you need to be extra cautious. And seeking shade is great. However, I know a lot of parents who go to baseball games, there isn't a lot of shade. And so you can bring shade. They make, you know, chairs with shade or umbrellas, and all of that can be a great adjunct to your other sun protection tips.
Those are great ideas. And don't forget about those pretty inexpensive pop-up tents that you can bring as well that people use on the beach or tailgating or at baseball games. Yeah. So those are easy to put up and move, and you have plenty of shade and don't have to be so worried about sitting out in the sun during those peak hours.
The other situation that we'll see a lot in the office is people forgetting that on cloudy days, those ultraviolet rays are still coming through, and also on cool days. So sun strength is not determined by the temperature so much as where the sun is in rotation to the earth. Late May, sometimes we have very, very cool weather, but that sun is as strong as mid-July sun if you look at where we are from the vernal equinox and the earth. So it's a misconception that cloudy days and cool days don't require sunscreen.
Well, I'm really glad that you clarified that, because I know lots of people do think that, oh, it's cloudy today, I don't need to have my sunscreen on. So would it be different if it were raining, if it were a day when it was just going to rain the whole day? And I realize you wouldn't be outside as much, but do you still need to put sunscreen on?
You should still put sunscreen on exposed skin. And likewise, in the winter, you should still put sunscreen on exposed skin, especially if you're going to be skiing or you're at higher altitudes where you're going to get more sun and have that reflecting sun. Same thing happens in the summertime when people are on the lake or in the lake, and they'll get that reflecting sun. So you're getting it from above and below. And so you have to be really cognizant of how much sun exposure you're getting so you don't get that burn. Nothing ruins a great vacation like having a blistering sunburn.
Absolutely. And I think people keep those things in mind when they are going on summer vacations, but not necessarily on snowmobiling, sledding, skiing vacations. But that vacation can be ruined by a sunburn as well. So those are good things to know. So I do have a question about medications. I know there are some medications that people take that have a warning that come along with them that say to be cognizant of how much time you spend in the sun, or that you could have increased risk potentially of sunburn or some things based on the medication that people take. What can you tell us about that?
There are many photosensitizing medications. One of them that's very common and is over the counter is Naprosyn, one of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And then some antibiotics, sulfa drugs, the fluoroquinolones like Cipro. There are many blood pressure medications that are photosensitizing. Tetracyclines can be. So sunscreen would help protect them, but additional sun protective measures are typically needed for someone who is on any of those medications. Additionally, there are photosensitizing foods, and one of the most common ones are limes. So if you're consuming or squeezing lime juice and get that on your hands or face, and then you go out in the sun, you may get a sunburn and not quite understand why. Celery, dill, lemons, grapefruit, and figs also have that potential, but to a lesser degree than limes.
That is so interesting. I learned some things about photosensitizing foods today. Not something that I had heard about before. So definitely something to keep in mind, because a lot of these foods we're consuming in the summertime. So, so the answer to the medications, if you're taking one of those, is to wear sunscreen, as we've been saying this entire time, but also to wear some of those sun protective clothing items, sunglasses, long sleeves, and a wide brimmed hat. Is that accurate?
Yes, and trying to avoid as best they can significant exposure between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Okay, that's good to know. I actually have experienced that before with an aunt of mine who got quite a sunburn at a football game in the fall one day when she was on a medication and had kind of forgotten about that. So keep those things in mind if you are taking a medication that is photosensitizing or if you're consuming lots of those yummy, delicious foods that we just talked about. So, Kay, I realize that there are lots of different skin tones, variations in skin color among different populations. But who might be at most risk for skin cancer? And how do we monitor our skin and know if we should see someone?
Thank you, Angie, for asking that very important question. The first thing I'd like to say is that the older you are, the more at risk you are, right? Because sun exposure is cumulative. So certainly the people we see in their 90s are at more risk for skin cancers than the people we see who are 16. However, there are groups of people who tend to be at more risk for skin cancers. And there's non-melanoma skin cancer and there's melanoma. And those are different. Family history is a factor. Your immune status. So people who've had organ transplants and are on drugs that suppress their immune system are at increased risk for skin cancer. If you have red hair and very fair skin, or skin that burns very easily and never tans, that puts you at more risk for skin cancer. If you've had blistering sunburns, or you just don't have a generally healthy health status, that can put you at more risk for skin cancer. Some people have a lot of moles on their body, and that is considered in and of itself a risk factor for melanoma. And if you've had a lot of abnormal moles in the past, so currently they say if you have more than 18 moles, that's considered to be a risk factor. And it's probably a good idea for all of us to do a self-exam of our skin every month so we know what's normal. And then if something shows up that's not normal, that we know we can go to our healthcare provider and take a look. For instance, if you've had a bump that you think is a pimple for 6 weeks and it's not getting better, or a lesion that bleeds easily, or a mole that has multiple colors and looks different than any other mole on your body, those would all be reasons to see a healthcare provider.
Okay, so those are all really good tips. I think as soon as you notice those changes, you probably should consider seeing a healthcare provider, if I'm hearing and understanding what you're saying, instead of putting those things off. So the sooner the better.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much for that information. I think that's very important for our listeners to understand that there are people who are at more risk. But then again, if we all wear our sunscreen every day and we take our precautions, then we will decrease those risks substantially.
Definitely will.
So before we finish, what are your thoughts on indoor tanning beds? And are there any current laws in Indiana?
The American Academy of Dermatology and the Dermatology Nurse Association both strongly support tanning bed bans for all minors. And that has been something that both groups have been working on state to state for several years. In Indiana, tanning bed use is banned if you're under 16 and requires not only parental consent, but the parent is supposed to be there at the same time if the minor is 16 or 17 years old. We also know that they can be addictive and that people love the feeling of being in them and the relaxation, and that can lead to problems. Saying that, yes, tanning beds are carcinogenic. Cumulative use of ultraviolet light is going to increase your risk for developing skin cancer. Also, there's this myth. Since we're talking about myths, there's this myth that getting a base tan from a tanning bed will prevent you from getting a sunburn when you go on vacation. And that isn't true. A base tan is equivalent to applying SPF 4. SPF 4 is not going to give you very much protection against a sunburn for most people who are lighter skin toned. So there are better options than getting a base tan that's not going to protect you from sunburn and is going to increase your risk for skin cancer and definitely premature wrinkles and sunspots.
Okay, so it sounds like indoor tanning beds are quite scary places. So what if somebody wants to have that sun-kissed glow about them? Are there safe alternatives? Are there things we can do?
There are. I'd like to promote that we all just learn to love the skin that we're in. However, there are so many products on the market, and they have been determined to be completely safe. They've been out a long time. So you can use different makeups and bronzers, and those typically wash off. Or you can use the sun tanning type lotions or sprays that you apply that actually kind of dye your skin and wear off over a few days. There can be an art to learning how to apply those.
So the indoor businesses you can go to that they have the spray booths where they spray the products on would be considered a safe alternative.
Yes, it would. And typically you're going to get a very even cover. So I have a lot of patients who actually do that before prom.
Okay, so they get that sun-kissed glow in a safe manner and that lasts for a little while and then you can either reapply or just, as you say, love the skin you're in and go with your own natural glow then.
Exactly.
So Kay, do you have any final words for us or a wrap-up that you'd like to say to the listeners about sun protection and sunscreen and how we can best enjoy the outdoors during these beautiful days?
Well, definitely, I want people outside and being active and moving. We know that's best for their health. And so it's just being smart about your exposure and using these tips that are out there. I mentioned before sun protective clothing, and one of the things that I really like about it is when you choose those options, they often will help you stay cooler in the sun. And actually, one of my favorite brands to purchase for myself personally is called Coolibar, C-O-O-L-I-B-A-R. And you can order online. But there are many other companies that make sun protective clothing, and the sporting goods stores often have sun protective clothing now. Columbia, Under Armour, North Face, all of those make some sun protective clothing. So there are options that appeal to different ages, different sizes, and different income levels. Additionally, for resources, you can go to the American Academy of Dermatology website. The Dermatology Nurse Association has a good website. The Skin Cancer Foundation has a great website, as does the Children's Melanoma Research Foundation, which promotes educating our children in school about the dangers of the sun.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I think that our listeners will learn a lot from this podcast. I certainly did myself. I think now is time for a call to action to our listeners. So how can you best protect your skin from the damaging rays of sun? Well, like we talked about throughout this podcast, wear sunscreen with an SPF of 30 daily. Wear a hat with at least a 3-inch brim and some sunglasses to protect your eyes. There's also protective clothing that you can purchase that you can wear when you're going to be outside in direct sunlight. So keep these things in mind when you're going to be enjoying the outdoors during the summer and even the fall and winter and spring. So if you're in an Indiana 4-H club or are a 4-H club leader in Indiana, consider incorporating sun safety lessons and activities into your club meetings, and requiring sunscreen for all outdoor activities. One fun activity that kids love is making bracelets out of UV color-changing beads. When these special beads are exposed to the ultraviolet rays of the sun, they change colors to remind us to protect our skin by applying sunscreen. If you're interested in additional sun safety resources, contact me at alfrost@purdue.edu for more information. Also, visit our Indiana 4-H Facebook page and tell us how you protect your skin while enjoying outdoor activities. I hope you've been inspired to educate yourself, your family, and your 4-H club about sun safety and ways to protect your skin from the sun. Don't forget to pledge your health to better living by wearing sunscreen daily. So as Kay mentions, wear sunscreen and protect the skin you're in. Thanks for listening to this edition of Myth Monday on the 4-H Podcast.